Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Professional welder Shayna Ford used VR training developed by ForgeFX to hone her skills as a welder.
The more time that you spend practicing it, that's what separates a good welder from a great welder.
VR training can help students like Shayna repeatedly practice specific skills.
Virtual reality definitely helps because the more muscle memory that you have, the smoother your weld is.
Explore more stories like Shayna's at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
Everybody just do your job! You understand that?
Hey, will you shut up?
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. And thank you to our listeners coming to you live today from the Split Zone Duo Studios in Southern California. I'm Alex Kirshner. From the Split Zone Duo Bureau in Brooklyn, Richard Johnson, how are you?
Wasn't the Los Angeles Split Zone Duo Bureau recently commandeered by a different podcast?
It was.
What the hell was that?
A dear friend of mine does a comedy show. It's called Bad Behavior. She's very good. Her name is Sterling Mulberry, and she does a comedy show, and they recorded it at the Split Zone Duo desk.
We were infiltrated, is what we were.
It's like if we were to do a show on the Saturday Night Live set,
yeah,
in terms of the genre crossover.
Basically the same thing. Same level of shows as well.
Yeah, check it out though. It's called Bad Behavior. She's very good. That's not an ad. It's an honest personal endorsement of a friend. And in case you think we're coastal elites, only coming to you from Los Angeles and New York, Stephen Godfrey in the Nashville office of Split Zone Duo. How are you?
Are you actually in the Nashville office, or
Nashville? Okay. I'm in Nashville. Yes, I'm just not in my home studio. I'm here in God's country, Red State America, keeping the Gen Z liberal elites in check.
Someone's got to.
Someone has to do it, fellas. It's March. This is March, the end of March, as we record this episode right now for you, and that means that there actually is football being played. This is maybe the only time of the year when college football, in fact, not only, it is definitely the only time of the year where college football is not even close to the most popular college sport. So we figured that we should lift up this sport, help it pick itself up by its own bootstraps, and give people something to talk about with college football in the month of March. We got a good question from one of our subscribers on Substack at splitsonduo.com, Red Tide, who asked us, what actually matters during spring practice? Spring game stats and scores are meaningless. So what do we pay attention to during this period of time when for a couple of weeks between March and April, college football teams are on the field, reporters are often watching, toe is meeting leather, routes are being run, and the sport is actually happening on grass for the last time until people get back together late July, mid-July for fall camp. But first, some quick podcast business notes. I want to shout out our friends at Homefield. Go to homefieldapparel.com. You can use the promo code SZD20 for 20% off your first order. It's always a banging time to go and check out Homefield's new collections, and I think particularly during the month of March, a lot of really good basketball-centric stuff, including like shooting shirts, jersey looking items, like kind of like retro home field basketball jerseys. There is a ton happening at home field right now. I feel like I said every time we do an ad read for home field, because they're never not coming up with new ideas. They're truly ridiculous in that way. I'm of course today rocking my home field apparel charcoal gray sweater, a favorite staple. Stephen Godfrey, you are rocking some home field, I believe.
Oregon State.
Fantastic. Richard, are you home fielding today? Are you out in the wilderness today?
I am
shirt wise.
I'm representing a different apparel company who you may have heard of.
And they will not be, but they don't pay. So they're not going to be getting, they're not going to be getting a read. No, absolutely not. Thank you very much to our friends at Homefield. Also want to thank our dear friends at Nokian Tires. Tremendous supporters of this program for a long time. Godfrey, you drive your Nokian Tires over to the studio today?
I did. Yeah. I drive them everywhere every day.
And how'd they perform for you on your way from, I mean, this is about a four minute drive.
He's there.
This is about a 4 minute drive, but you're there and you're safe.
Oh man. You know, there's some days that the ad reads come natural, and there's some days you just kind of gut through them. Yes.
He's there.
He's made it very well. Nokian Tires,
he made
baby.
It one piece.
They performed extremely well, as they always do, even in tougher conditions than in the roughly 4 minute drive from Godfrey's house to where I know he is currently recording this podcast. Fellas, let's talk about spring ball. What actually matters? What are things that you actually take note of at this time of year in terms of the actual college football product?
I genuinely don't have an answer when it comes to what someone should look for in spring ball, because unlike a lot of the subjects, the topics that we get into lately about the sudden change or the weird landscape of college football, things that have gone on the last couple of years, spring ball has kind of been in decline if it ever had a peak for as long as I've been doing this job. And what I mean by that is when you're on the beat and you're responsible for content and coverage year round, and you cover a program where football is the dominant entity and you don't have like March Madness or another sport that's distracting you, you kind of have to find something. And so it's really important, like 20 years ago, to make sure that, hey, there's this new freshman who didn't get a lot of time, or maybe he's a rising sophomore, redshirt, whatever situation it is. We want to look at these new receivers that are replacing the top, you know, most of our productivity is gone at blah, 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 blah. That was what we would sort of force ourselves into. Then you got into like their conference network era and they started putting them on TV and it was really a strain. But that was right about the time, Richard, when I would start to build the whole gossip networks and I would do anonymous scouting. And every coach I talked to had some version of the same statement, which was, it doesn't matter. We just want to get out of spring without injuries. Then now you put the portal in. And the idea of if you want to go to practice as a fan, because some of these schools have open practices, that's awesome. You should do that. Just if you want to do it, do it. But the idea of like going and like gleaning something about the following August and September's football product for your team, that's insane. I mean, now we're in a spot now where the roster may not even be set. And so I have a hard time answering this question that we were asked about like what the actual football product's going to be. Now, there are some things, there are some fundamental things. I think like you can maybe see, you know, if a particular unit is terrible in the spring, the chances are that like you can't personnel your way out of that in the in the portal window. But, and this is where I'm getting at, we've already seen teams make drastic changes across position units in the portal era. So I go back to the original question asked, and I'm thinking, I don't know what to tell people. The only thing I do during spring football is I go and talk to coaches and just kind of shoot the shit and network.
There are a couple of things I can tell you spring is worth. One, marketing. Spring football is so your new football coach can begin to market himself and his vision and his yada, yada, yada. As someone who goes to campuses during spring to talk to coaches and receive said marketing pitch in the form of a 30 to 45 minute to an hour sit down interview, which will typically go on a website that I work for. That's one thing. He's setting the tone. He's setting the message. He's also introducing himself. He's introducing himself as a proper football coach in at least some way, as a proper football coach to his new charges and his new constituency. So keep that in mind. I do think there is a legitimate actual utility to spring practice for your early enrolled freshmen. Your freshman who showed up on campus, not in June, or isn't just going to show up in campus in June, but skips their senior spring and shows up in campus in January. That I actually think there is legitimate utility to those freshmen just seeing the speed of the game And I know some of this ends up in the cliche bucket, but I do think they're cliches for a reason. Working out with the team, a little bit of the camaraderie aspect, the physicality, the speed of the game, like just like playing college football, even if it's at 75% speed. And yes, the injury point is actually well noted. Clemson, for instance, is a program that will start spring a little bit earlier than you may think or may think it should be started. Because they actually want to buy the time back on the back end in case someone does get hurt. And that's something, a way you can sort of schedule your spring practice and orient your spring practice so that you can sort of safeguard for the worst case scenario.
The early enrollee thing is funny because one of the great spring ball cliches that means less than nothing is, our early enrollees are already bonding. Like, they're so close. Like, these guys are basically inseparable. They're like brothers already. And therefore they'll be great players and nobody will ever transfer. And it's a testament to the culture that we're building here and yada, yada. And I don't care, but I do take note of it when there are certain freshmen and there are a couple dozen of these players a year who you might spot. From the 4 and 5 star ranks, who like anybody from a distance can know, okay, they probably want this guy to contribute right away. The obvious example this year is Jeremiah Smith at Ohio State, who a lot of people think is the best wide receiver prospect since Calvin Johnson.
Well, or the guy he's replacing, as a claim.
But that's just the point. Ohio State clearly like needs this guy to be really good right away. And so I am paying attention to it, that it's spring ball and Jeremiah Smith is already there and they already took the black stripe off the helmet, which is what Ohio State does when you sort of earn it in whatever nebulous, weird Buckeye way you earn things. Like, I note that. I note it if there's a freshman who clearly a program because of its very particular needs.
They took the black stripe off his helmet in spring?
In spring, which they don't do a lot. They don't do a lot. And you notice this in a couple players a year, you notice this because, like, well, Ohio State just lost Marvin Harrison Jr. Like, they need, and I think Emeka Ibuka is coming back, but they need a guy. I say I think because we'll get to this. No one knows anything about rosters for reasons we'll discuss. But, like, they need this guy to be a guy if they want to have the we're back year that they're hoping they have given the turnover at Michigan. And so the fact that he's already on campus and already getting the black stripe taken off, yeah, like, I'll pay attention to that, you know? Like, that instead of getting ready for prom. Like, that's a difference, and I will pay attention to that. But those are limited circumstances. There aren't a ton of players like that who would cause me to make that note.
What do we pay attention to? This is where I get it. This is where I kind of got stuck on the question earlier. Like, everything that you've said is sort of a minor it's a news item within that very important team that will be a playoff and title contender. But I think past that, okay, took the stripe off. Does this mean I should pay attention to, like,
it's funny.
No, I'm asking.
He's making a point. He's making a point.
My ball is not a real thing in the spring.
But he's making a point that ties back to what we're talking about. Like, you're telling a story about a team that isn't going to play a game for 6 months, right?
Right.
And that is part of the – and again, it doesn't happen everywhere because Jeremiah Smiths don't grow on trees. But, yeah, like, it's one thing to engender, fan support and all that sort of stuff. And to be honest with you, I think spring football's place – in the zeitgeist actually has lessened as we put all of our chips into March Madness as far as how we consume college basketball. Because remember, you used to college basketball from January through the tournament. Then you used to college basketball from the Super Bowl through the tournament. Now you college basketball on noon of the Thursday of the NCAA tournament or conference tournament. All right, conference tournament if I'm going to be charitable.
A lot of casuals, yes.
If I'm going to be charitable.
A lot of casuals, that's how it is.
So what I'm saying is, and I was talking, I went to the NCAA tournament in Brooklyn and was in the media room, and I was talking to some beat writers, and somebody brought this up. They were like, oh, they started spring this week, which is tough because X team is actually in the NCAA tournament, but they started spring ball, so I don't really know what I'm going to do. That was what the beat writer was telling me. So it's interesting, and it's just funny how I think the tweaks of how we consume college basketball may have a little bit of a knock-on effect as to what we really care about in spring football. And then, as Alex is recently talking about, just I think the general ratchet down of how much like we care about the spring game or how much we put into this. And it's not just we, it's them. Like, they've been canceling spring games. They've been putting behind closed doors. They've been like,
yeah, absolutely. Our field needs new turf, so we're just going to cancel the spring game is something we've heard and seen multiple times the last couple of years.
Like, they are telling you a certain thing about the spring game. And look, to be honest with you, some of my favorite memories as a childhood college football fans are actually going to the spring game. I would go to the spring game with my mom. She would take me to the orange and blue game every year. It's free, you know, whatever. And she's never, ever going to go to a Gator game, but she would take me to the orange and blue game and we'd have a nice day out, mother and son. And you know, a lot of the times they sort of schedule these spring games where it's like spring game at noon, baseball at 2, lax at 5, you know, whatever. Or softball at 5.
Yeah.
And it's a nice Saturday on campus and you can sort of program it around the whole thing. So, and it's certainly a visit opportunity for recruiting and all that sort of stuff. So I'm not saying they don't matter or there's zero utility to them.
It matters a lot. I've heard
Grove Bowl weekend in Oxford was great. And I don't want to take anyone's like memory or participation away from like a good spring weekend on campus. Like, you know, when we were in college, like there would always be a home baseball series because Ole Miss sort of became a baseball school while I was there and the weather was good there. Sometimes it would coincide with this big music festival in Oxford called Double Decker. It's a good weekend to go out if you're a college student. However, again, and this isn't me trying to like break the idea. I think that we often look at the NFL as a superior scheduling model. I'm not talking about football games. I'm talking about sort of zeitgeist and narrative. And this may be even more so than the messy personnel situation that we are still trying to figure out in college football. This is a good example of like, maybe we don't know how to turn this into a sort of season, if you will.
I've brought this up before on this show. College football is not quite a 12-month-a-year sport. We talk about it a lot, and we like to pretend it is. The NFL is a 12-month-a-year sport because of the regimented segmentation of its calendar, right? We went from to now. By the way, they have sort of they're at owners' meetings right now. It's the end of March, and then obviously you get draft and OTA season, yada, yada, yada. Like, there is a segmentation that you can get when there's only 32 of them versus when there's 132 of them. And
you don't have school. You don't have school.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, I would note that for the cold weather schools, like, this is just conjecture. I didn't call someone at Wisconsin to ask this, but I bet Wisconsin likes a nice spring game visit list because
you're not going to Camp Randall in April. In January.
No, they are. I mean, they are. People are. And I think if you're going to play there, you have to be cool with that. But like Madison, Wisconsin in the spring and summer, I've been there. It's pretty good. Pretty good. Like, you'd like to show off what it's going to be like at times outside of the playing season if you're in certain climates. And spring game is, or spring practice at least, is a chance to showcase that.
Real fast. And I'm not saying you have to have a spring game when I'm sitting here questioning the idea of its existence at all. Richard said that your mom took you to the is it called Blue and Orange game?
Orange Blue game, yes.
Orange and Blue game, okay. So never not a father of three. I'm like, oh, time accounted for. So I get on, I immediately with one hand on another screen while you were talking, I'm like right-handed, I'm left-handed, Googling Vanderbilt spring game 2024 because I live near campus. Canceled.
Are they going to have a state? Yeah, they don't have a stadium, do they?
So, now, and there's another, so they're going to have like some kind of open scrimmages at some nice local high schools. And I've seen that work to people's favor before. One of the smart things that Luke Fickell did when Tommy Tuberville gutted the Cincinnati program because of shitty recruiting, he went and held all his spring practices at high school powerhouses in Cincinnati. And guess what? It worked. they're kind of doing the same thing at Vanderbilt, but that's another example of like, well, they, now I'm going to be honest. I drive by that stadium all the time. They could have a spring game.
Sure.
They chose not to.
Florida State, by the way, Florida State's in a similar boat. The entire half of Florida State stadium is completely blown out right now. Like they're going to be temporary. They're going to be temporary seats during the actual football season. They're working on a giant renovation to that side of Doak that will open up in 2025. But yeah, I don't know if the Noles are going to have a spring game in Doak.
Who's paying for that?
So our questioner asked what actually matters during spring ball. And we've covered some of it. A couple other things that I think are worth covering. The most important thing about spring football now is what happens right afterward. It's April 15th to 30th. That is the portal window. There's a lot of rumor right now that it's going to be a wild, wild transaction period. Probably will, because of a litany of factors, the continued development of collectives, the recent coach changes after the initial postseason portal window at a couple of the richest programs in college football, though how rich in NIL? Well, Alabama and Michigan might show us pretty soon. And also because of some of the legal setbacks that the NCAA has had and the opening up of multi-time transfers and the continued narrowing of what is considered illegal in the way of recruiting players by way of collective funds, probably going to be quite a lot happening. And so you could have felt amazingly optimistic about the press clippings that you got out of your spring ball, and it could all get completely nuked or the reverse in the back half of April. I think all the ingredients are there for it to be a really chaotic couple of weeks, which for us, fun. For some, for coaches, not fun, but that's what the money's for.
As skeptical, I'm glad you brought it up, because as skeptical as I can be, I think you guys know, at portal roster construction, even though I am, it's the way of the world. I'm seeing the light. Them April transfers. I don't know about them April transfers, all right? The April transfers, queasy. Make me a little queasy. The post-spring practice transfers.
Yeah.
Is that because you lose a competition in spring?
No.
Let's talk about it. No, let's talk about it. This is a great point. I have developed a bespoke take here, but I feel pretty strongly about this. If a quarterback is transferring out of your program at the end of April, that is good. That means that somebody won the job, and it wasn't them, but it means someone won the job. If you have a truly open competition with two or three guys who might want to start, and none of them have left. What does that mean? That means that nobody is sitting pole. That means nobody distinguished themselves. I think you want your quarterback, Alex.
We have a culture of competition, and everything is going to be earned. Yeah. And I don't want to hear about it. I don't want you guys every Tuesday asking me this question. Uh-huh. So you know what? We're going to go all the way to week one right here. Yep. Okay. And we are a culture of competition, right. Alex.
You want someone to transfer at quarterback. And I think you absolutely want it. I will note some recent examples of the spring transfer. It doesn't always mean it's going to work out, but it does mean that somebody clearly won the job. So a couple of years ago, Gary Bohannon left Baylor, wound up at USF. This was in 2022. That meant that Blake Shapen had won the job at Baylor. Now, Baylor has backslid since then, but I don't think it's been the quarterback's fault. I think they probably got the better quarterback. A couple of years ago, JT Daniels left Georgia after spring ball or during spring ball for West Virginia. That meant that they felt pretty confident in Stetson Bennett. And that was much to the skepticism of certain college football podcasters. Turned out they were right.
We will never find out who those podcasters are.
The most famous example, Joe Burrow left Ohio State post-spring ball.
Sorry, who?
But even that, it meant that Dwayne Haskins had won the job, and he was really good. And we'll never know if Joe Burrow could have been what he became if he'd stayed at Ohio State. Generally speaking, if a quarterback is leaving your program after spring, that means that somebody else has distinguished himself and is going to win the job. So that's like the portal thing I watch for most closely.
I think it's
a good sign for you if quarterback leaves, unless you just get outbid, which could be another problem.
That's quarterbacks.
I guess you have to adjust this for a portal world.
That's quarterbacks. But what about the other 20 positions? I think
that's interesting.
That's where I get a little queasy about the post-spring, man. Character concerns. Showed up on campus. thought he could play. Realize he can't. Bad vibes. Like, I don't know. The post-spring transfer, and again, like I said, I'm warming to our transfer portal reality as far as roster construction is concerned, as far as championship roster construction is concerned. I am warming to the reality. But that post-April spring transfer portal is I don't know. I gotta cozy up to it a little bit more.
Yeah, it's a little bit dicey. I think you make a point there. Other things that I would watch for in the actual spring ball portion of spring ball. Have you been able to hold your staff together? Did your head coach leave? That just happened at a program that we'll talk about in a second. But as the coaching carousel gets seemingly longer and longer, you don't want to be trying to hire assistants in March and April. If you can avoid it, like, that's bad. You would really like to be able to keep that together. And the other thing is, certain scheme changes, I think, can be notable. The classic thing is that the coach will say, oh, we're going to be multiple. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to play an exciting style of football that our fans will be proud of. Like, please stop. I don't need to hear you talk about this. But there are times where programs that are known for playing a certain way send unmistakable signals that they are going to play differently that year. And
like when
they might send that,
like when Army invited certain college football writers, again, we'll never know who, but when Army invited certain college football writers to come to campus to talk about how they were switching to the option, and then they're kind of not doing that. They're kind of reversing that.
Well, they did sort of. Yeah.
They did it for like 3 weeks.
We'll talk about them in a sec. LSU in 2019. Remember this. This was years of Les Miles kind of trying to play man ball. Ed Orgeron definitely trying to play man ball. Ed Orgeron did not fully overhaul that, even in the early days, like the Matt Canada days at LSU when he had the full-time job there. But in the spring of 2019, LSU pretty much came out and said, we're changing some things. We're going to be different. I went back to make sure I wasn't misremembering this. And friend of the show, Billy Gomila, wrote from the 2019 LSU spring game that, yeah, like, it was different. He said, well, people have been calling for it for a long time. And on Saturday, LSU certainly showed a revamped offense, spending the entire spring game in the shotgun with a no huddle spread attack. Pretty good signal.
Yeah.
You know, turned out they did that. And so there are times where you make a dramatic change in spring. You talk about how you're going to make it. And then when cameras and fans are in the stands, you actually make it. Yeah. Like, pay attention to that. Like, I think that is, that you're probably not going to totally go back in fall camp if you're talking about and you're exhibiting that kind of change.
Well, we've talked about this example before, but like, I think the clearest example of this in recent memory in college football was, and it ended up being ill-fated, but Georgia Tech going from Paul Johnson flexbone to Jeff Collins more modernized offense come out first snap of the spring game in the flex bone, quarterback claps his hands and they go into the shotgun. That is, oh my God, we're in a new era. And then we won't talk about what happened after that, but that's the thing.
And Paul Johnson hates him. Wow.
That's a way that you can use spring game and spring football to market a drastic change in your program. And then also from a nuts and bolts schematic lens, yes, you do put in your off. Now, you're not putting in the bells and the whistles. And by the way, a thing about spring that can sometimes be difficult is how you program them mentally, because you're going at each other. This happens in training camp too. But like, you get to like week three of going against the same, your teammates, the same guys doing the same things, the same play. It can get monotonous. It's hard to motivate, and it's hard to program something that can be hard to program something that keeps them, the players that is, sort of engaged to an extent without the carrot of, we're going to go out and actually play an opponent on Saturday. It is a tricky thing to do. And that's how that I think is the nature of that word culture. Gets thrown around a ton, but the culture of competition that the best programs have at the championship level, take spring as seriously as you can as an incubator and sort of a training camp junior, if you want to say it.
I think that's a very compelling point. In the spirit of applying this to the real world that we live in right now, I have prepared six compelling spring ball 2024 teams that I think are worth watching closely over these couple weeks and the next month or so. Can anyone guess the first one?
Well, you've already brought it up. The Ohio State University.
No, actually, I'm not including them.
Oh,
no. Though Jeremiah Smith, the thing is interesting.
Local coach with some success retires from program.
I'm not familiar with such a program.
I think we can take the first two together. I think Alabama and Michigan are really interesting spring ball programs this year, for slightly different reasons, but related reasons. For Alabama, it's all roster management. Yeah, Kalen DeBoer, you're establishing your culture. He clearly did that very well at Washington. Culture, culture, culture. Very cute. Not that it's not important, but fine. But who's going to be on your team? And we're going to probably find that out after spring ball.
Because when you make
a coaching change in – yep, Caden Proctor is the tackle who went to Iowa, apparently just wanted to get to watch Caitlin Clark play in person for a few months and then
– I got you, baby.
Come on back. I understand that.
He pulled the Josh McDaniels.
If you're Alabama, we will find out how successful their collective fundraising drive has been on about April 15th. Maybe very successful. Maybe not. I don't know. But I mean, Stephen, we talked in January about how that is sort of the defining challenge of post Nick Saban Alabama is can you convert what has been a massive and sustained spending financial advantage over the rest of the SEC into the world where you have to pay players quasi directly through a third party for now? Can you make one kind of financial might into another? And that's really it. You know, Jalen Milroe will throw the ball very far. He will do. But other than that, who's going to be on the team? Like, that is the interesting thing with Alabama this spring is what happens immediately after spring practice.
Well, remember, the point that Alex is making there about Alabama is, well, so, like, you're in an era at Alabama. Now you're entering into an era at Alabama where in myriad ways, their level of exceptionalism is just going to drop. I mean, this is what happens. And I think when you talk portal, the very clear example is the guys that will take a discount on the bag to go play for Nick Saban versus any other place. Now, there are some guys who the money is the biggest thing, and then they went where they went for the reasons that they went. But there are other guys who took NIL discounts because it was Alabama, and they were a program that could do that. Price of the brick is now the price of the brick when the old man's gone. And so how that perpetuates in the future is going to be fascinating for me to see with Alabama as we do the post-spring portal thing.
That's if we go back to the conceit of this episode on what do you watch for? What do you like as a sort of passive viewer experience? We're talking about very relevant things, I think very impactful things. It's hard to identify them in real time, which makes it again a sort of hard season to structure for casual and even moderate fans. You guys are both dead on in the fact that like you could watch an Alabama spring game and be fascinated this year because of schematic changes, personnel changes, coaching change, all that stuff. And yeah, there's some relevance and some interest there. But as Richard is pointing out, I don't know how soon we're going to be able to discern the NIL shakeout. I went and spoke at Alabama at a journalism conference a couple of weeks ago, and I was on a panel. What's up?
Not to the football team.
You know what? I think there's some student athletes there. I'm very popular.
Okay.
There was an NIL rep on one of my panels, and we talked afterwards, like, you know, just off the record kind of talking about like, yeah, the Saban discount, that's over. And then the culture shift and the change. And we've talked about it, Alex. We talked about it on the emergency show multiple times when we actually had the changing of the guard. These are like seismic things and issues. I just don't know how we're going to be able to tell exiting the spring right away, because there's a mentality in Tuscaloosa that might be arms crossed. You're asking check riders in that group to do something they've never really had to do. Well, they've done it before, but they haven't done it at this scale. And the other thing is that Saban was a galvanizing force on day one. He walked into an existing mess, which Alabama doesn't have. We know success makes them complacent. Anyone complacent. Anyone. I think you might have an arms crossed attitude leaving the spring. And so, yeah, you might. I guess the thing to watch for, if we are sort of turning this into a viewer event, is what is the spring attrition? Period. Is it one? Is it five? Is it 10? I think that's the best way to judge it. We may not be able to drill down much further than that, because I think a lot of those big time check writers have not yet really been motivated or convinced that this is the way of the new world. Now, they will as soon as Alabama turns in a bad season by their standards. So again, as a passive viewing experience, it's hard to say, like, look out for this. Now, if we see 10 two deep transfers as soon as that window opens, well, if that happens, we'll probably make a podcast out of it. Like, that's a discernible event. I just don't know if it's going to happen quite that dramatically.
Yeah. It might. We're going to learn some things, and then we'll learn more things when they actually play football. Also true in Ann Arbor, in my opinion. Michigan fits into a couple of these buckets of what would you pay attention to if it happened in spring ball. For one, they had a staff change in the middle of spring ball because Greg Scruggs, their defensive line hire, was arrested for driving under the influence and resigned shortly thereafter. That's a big first thing for Sharon Moore to deal with right out of the gate. And it's way, you know, that kind of thing is way more serious than football, but it still necessitates a significant bit of late cycle football work for a guy who is already trying to do the difficult litany of new coach things. So watching that pretty closely at Michigan, but also they're a team that I'm interested in schematically in spring ball, because we don't know who's going to play quarterback. They just sent, by the time you might listen to this, well, he might be a first, probably is going to be a high first round pick in the NFL draft, in JJ McCarthy. And they might go portal shopping for a quarterback after spring ball. Wouldn't be surprising at all. But, like, will Michigan come out in the spring game, and will Alex Orji, the quarterback who they brought in to do anything but throw the ball periodically last year, will he suddenly be throwing the ball out of the gun in the spring game? Like, that, I would at least take note of that. Jack Tuttle is going on for his either 21st or 7th college football season. I'm interested in those reports about what Michigan might be doing at quarterback this year, because kind of like the situation that we talked about at Ohio State, like, they have a pretty notable loss at a pretty important position. And while I know that a lot of people at Michigan would understand something of a step back this year, like, I think a lot of people still would like to be in the 12-team playoff this year. And how you massage that position among others and start to do that maybe during spring ball, Michigan, congrats. That makes you interesting to me this March and April.
I think I would just be interested in anything that I would be interested in, some sort of roundup of Michigan beat writers or people who are familiar enough that have covered the team in its, if not day to day, then maybe week to week functionality, in what of the sort of really weird, really, like, really idiosyncratic Harbaugh things are gone. I would be interested in that. Is, like, are there any, I can't overstate this enough. Like, it's such a, he's one of one in the weird stuff that he does and the weird way he comports himself and structures. And,
oh, like, yeah. No, they'll miss him. He's one of the best to ever do it.
Well,
yeah,
that's a personal preference, but I want to know, like, what is vastly different on a logistics level or look, man, I hate to say this 'cause I'm too old to say it. What about the vibes? Like, well, did we get all the Harbaugh out of there? Like, I'm very curious about that.
Richard, right, I'm away. Curious for your thought on this.
Or is he hanging on to it because he's not yet ready to be his own man as a head coach?
I wonder what you think about this. Like, the vibes between Jim Harbaugh and Michigan could not have possibly parted on better terms. Like,
no,
it's kind of a celebratory send-off.
Literally, like, could not have parted on better terms.
But Would it be right to say that there will probably be certain times when relief is sighed because presumably, I know nothing of his beliefs, but presumably Sharon Moore is not going to like say something ridiculous about abortion. Like he's not going to claim he would adopt the player's kids so they don't have to get abortions. And it doesn't drive a 4-day news cycle because Jim Harbaugh said that. He literally said that.
I know he said that, but like I'm going to be honest.
Do you think that Michigan
that
will
stands? Wait, hang on. That shit stood out because we don't agree with it politically. I don't know how much.
No,
like,
it stood out because it was weird.
You know, part of the thing with Harbaugh is that when he says stuff that's far afield of like how you're receiving it, that stands out again because he has such a weird personality inside the building at Michigan. That didn't make
maybe
a
not the football building, maybe not. But I want to be clear. It's not because I disagree with it, though obviously I do. Like I do not assume that the majority of FBS coaches agree with my position on a woman's
right
to make
that decision.
No, what
I'm saying is like that didn't have a tangible football effect. My point is,
and sorry, I've taken us on a long and unintentional digression here. Like I know that there were certain things that he did that annoyed certain people at Michigan who were powerful who weren't in the football building. And I wonder if there's a bit of this is kind of nice that we don't have to deal with that part of it now.
Sure. But if Sharon Moore don't beat Ohio State, it don't mean a goddamn thing.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Yeah.
You know, like it is what it is. Like we all know what we're doing.
That's what I'm saying. Like if anything, if you had to put it on the table right now and be like, hey, Sharon Moore's going to say like six controversial things conservatively about abortion, but you're going to beat Ohio State and go to the playoff. Michigan's going to be like, check.
Yeah,
that
baby. Like,
box.
Let's rock. 100%. Like,
they don't give a shit.
Agreed. But I'm still interested in like what, because that was an interesting relationship between Jim and Michigan. And it was a very, very fruitful relationship for everyone. And it ended on the best vibe possible. But, maybe if you don't win as many games, you have a harder time getting along with your bosses when you create inconveniences for them, which I think is an interesting thing to monitor going forward.
Ward Manuel, in a very different way, outlasted Jim Harbaugh, John Beilein, and Juwan Howard for slightly different reasons on all three, but keep that in mind. Keep that in mind. And it's all in the College Football Playoff Committee. Nobody had him
winning the Deadpool.
Yeah, buddy. Yeah.
We'll come back to this one too, but this is quickly. Mark Stoops could be in position to outlast John Calipari at the University of Kentucky.
This is going to be a developing story.
Let's see where the story goes.
I'm not sure that's as surprising to me as you think it is.
Yeah.
I'm a student of history, and I remember the last time that a football coach and a basketball coach did not get along at Kentucky. They happened to be two of the best to ever do it, Adolph Rupp and Bear Bryant. And Bear Bryant was at Texas A&M.
Where are you going with that theory? Do you think Kentucky's going to become a football school?
No, but that's just the thing. It's like a couple years ago, this was two or three off seasons ago, it became very clear that those two have significant beef.
But if you're a student of history, you would note what has happened in Kentucky football history since Bear Bryant left until basically the day Mark Stoops showed up.
Reasonable.
I think it actually goes back to the Sharon Moore thing, which is that if you win, you get to talk a little shit.
You get to almost take
or if you go 7-6, even you get to talk a little shit.
It's kind of about scale in that regard. Yeah, like.
Interesting spring ball team 2024, Army. Last year, they did a lot of work out of the shotgun. They had Richard out to West Point to talk about it for Sports Illustrated before the season started.
Boy, you want to talk about spring practice in a cold place. That shit was a brick.
Upstate off the river.
Cold. Brick.
Well.
Yeah, but they had the indoor.
They weren't in it.
Nice.
This year they're going back to their old ways, sort of, kind of.
Probably. Yes.
Probably. Yes. Army, and they are again talking about this publicly, though I think a little bit less nationally than they were last year. But Jeff Munkin is coming out and saying this. This is via Black Knight Nation, quote, "I anticipate being an under center team that runs gun, not the other way around. We've probably moved more to the under center stuff the last couple of years than we had earlier. There has been some time in my tenure here at Army that we ran more gun than we did in other years, but I anticipate we will run both. He goes on. Point is, Army went to the shotgun option last year. They tried to kind of Jamie Chadwell Coastal Carolina things a little bit, and it sounds like that might have been a little the hand got a little too close to the stove is what it sounds like, because they weren't very good, and the whole game control, ball control thing that they have sometimes been so good at, they were not very good at.
This is both smart and hasty. It's smart because if you take the long view, this is smart. There's a reason the triple exists, and it's largely now for service academies, for all the service academy reasons that if you've been with our show for a while, I don't need to repeat. It's also hasty because I was weirdly at the Delaware State game because my kid wanted to go to an Army game. And it was early in the season, and they were still showing signs of the stress and frustration of operating that new system schematically against one of the fucking worst rosters I've ever seen a football team bring out on a field at Delaware State. I'm sorry. Like, they were like, dude, I think every receiver they had was 5'6". Like, it was fucking rough, bro. Sorry, I know I'm supposed to be championing the little guy, but I was like, Jesus. I think they were hasty in that they did not, they were not willing to go through a painful transition in recruiting and personnel, which is really hard to do when you're fucking West Point, to make those positions work in the scheme that they were trying to aspire towards. I think the decision makers at West Point, namely Munkin, were sold an idea that it would transition a little bit faster than is actually possible in terms of the personnel. That is my educated opinion on that. Could they run it eventually? Maybe. Is it safer in the long term, in the aggregate, to just run the thing you know works? Yes.
I wonder how the move to the American might play into this.
It. Thank you for asking. Well, I fucking hate it.
Yeah,
it happened this year. It takes this year in July.
It's happening this year. But if you Google American Army, that is not tough. What comes up, yeah. Interestingly.
Tough for the Google searches. The SEO.
But yeah, I was making sure before the episode that
conference,
it was this
year. Like, at what point is that conference going to rebrand? Can we work on that?
Well, they're getting they are getting a new commissioner. Mike Oresko's retired.
I know. Oresko's retired. It's like, it's
man, who's
going to
put out angry press releases that don't do anything about how smaller schools
are
being
mistreated? Come on, Mike's a sweetheart. Look,
he is kind of a sweetheart.
Mike got hired to play a really bad hand at a really high stakes table, and he bluffed at that table for like 10 years. God bless him. He's the only conference commissioner where you get the phone call as a reporter. Richard knows where I'm going with this. And you're like, oh, I got 5 minutes. I'm like walking in this restaurant to meet my wife. And I'm getting this guy to call me back to like confirm two things real fast. Like, Hey sir, thank you so much for calling me back. I just want to go over like this one thing real fast. And then
well,
also I had to ask you a question.
Might as well order the entrees without me.
Brother, you better put that fucker. I did this once before dinner with my wife where Oresko kept me on solid 55 minutes. 5 minute phone call, 55 minute duration. God bless you, Mike Oresko.
I like Oresko because he does not pretend that he isn't a creature of the college sports media game. Like, I don't like the guys
who pretend
like I'm blocking out the noise. Like, no, like Mike Oresko lives to sit with you in a hotel bar. And talk
brother,
shop.
He would be the best wedding guest. Like he would talk to everyone there. Like, yeah, dude, he runs for mayor in any room he's walking through. God bless him. I have no ill will. Did he send out all that shit on that Power Six letterhead for a decade? Absolutely.
I still have a Power Six golf towel from Clam Bake Golf Tournament.
I have the like cord holder things. I have a bunch of that crap laying around. I just need to throw it away. But yeah,
by the
Power
way,
Six, baby.
You know that Oresko was one of the primary drivers of the SEC on CBS becoming what it became.
He worked at
like
CBS.
He's worked on not only different sides of the industry, but different sides of the big guys versus little guys fence in college sports and done all of them effectively.
Anyway, I don't know how we got here. Army, probably just going to run that triple.
I wonder if they're going to try to like if they have aspirations of getting on a little mini run like Navy got on at the beginning of the American. I think they played in the conference title game in maybe 15 or 16 and lost to Matt.
You know what happened
Temple.
After that? You know what happened after
well,
that?
Then they couldn't replicate the quarterback situation when it wasn't Keenan Reynolds or Malcolm Perry, and it got very
bad. Do you know what happened a week after that?
Tell me.
They lost to Army for the first time in 17 years.
Oh, yep. That did happen.
I'm telling you, dude, that. This American thing has not panned out well for Navy, and Army's going to say, well, we're not Navy. And I'm like, no, but y'all kind of are the same thing all the time, and there's probably only space for one of you to be dominant. And I don't understand the idea of going up against highly athletic teams. I know Houston and UCF are gone and Cincinnati and all that, but like, I don't get this. They should both, like, why not? The academy should just both be independent. I don't understand why they're doing it. I know, like, I'm going to get the mail and I'm going to get the messages from the administrators. I know why you're doing it. But
Steven, you also know what kind of games they're sacrificing here. Like, Army plays in the last couple of years, you would look at an Army schedule and it'd be like, what is Colgate doing there in the middle of the season? Or what is.
No one gives a shit.
Like, but my point is that I think it will cut back on the number of kind of weird games that Army.
Hang on.
Plays.
Army's about to play Tulsa. A lot.
Yeah. They don't fucking care. They don't want to lose. Yeah. That's it. Like, look, okay. Look, ask the plebes and shit. Like, you know, I mean, I'm ask the firsties and plebes and like, they want winnable games. They want to beat Navy and they want to have a situation periodically where, like, you know, you can go to a fuckface.com bowl and you can maybe have a moment like Oklahoma. I mean, Army doesn't get a Notre Dame tradition like Navy does. I think they would definitely want that. I mean, but who the hell's going to sign up for that now, right? Who's going to be like, we'll play you every year? You know, that's you can't do that. I have strong feelings about this because it is such a unique situation for those two academies, way more so than Air Force, that I don't get it. I know why the Americans doing it, because it's good viewership. I mean, Army had its own TV package with CBS. I guess that's going away.
Haven't looked into that, probably, but I will admit that I need to.
Any Army home game would default to the CBS Sports Network and then obviously CBS for Army Navy. Occasionally they would roll one of them.
The Army Navy thing is also weird because it's like not a conference game. It's weird. It's weird.
Yeah. Getting back to the scheme thing, Alex, I think what you'll see is a gun package in a kind of what he said. You're going to see a gun package in a triple offense versus instead of like triple tendencies in that gun option offense. And I'm not saying you couldn't do it if you gave it 5 years, but I would say it's going to take more labor pains to deliver that than you guys thought last year. Facts.
Quick note, want to credit Ken McMillan, reporter with the Middle Times Herald Record, who reported last October that the Army CBS sports deal will coexist with the Americans ESPN deal unless ESPN buys CBS out of that arrangement, which I do not believe has happened. Since that was written.
That's very curious to me because it applies to all the Army home games. So that means that the American's going to lose inventory or ESPN's going to lose.
Yeah, but they won't lose Army Navy though, because they already don't have it.
No, that's a separately negotiated deal.
The one Army game that you really care about, you don't have it anyway.
No, I'm just talking about it's American conference games that ESPN is losing inventory on. That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Sure.
Yeah. Like, and that normally doesn't happen unless. If anything, maybe ESPN does end up buying them out because they do deliver very consistent ratings because of the national viewership.
A couple more interesting spring ball teams, 2024. Ohio State is on this list at this point. We talked about Jeremiah Smith, and he might be the most exciting player to finally get a look at in college football this year. But I'm also interested in the general management of expectations and how Ohio State seems to talk about its year.
There is no, all right. I can't remember who I did this with last year. But Ohio State is the team this year, not even Georgia. Ohio State is the team. National championship or bust. I understand it's going to take 3 or 4 games to get there. I understand it's a tougher road to hoe. Maybe I'll be charitable and say, call me the first playoff game you play, which I did not say the first round, because you will be getting a playoff bye, because I know how this works. So call me the first playoff game you play, and I don't really care about anything else up until that. Ohio State, even more than Georgia, it is national championship or bust. It is deep playoff run, I guess, or bust.
Oh, way more than Georgia. Way more than Georgia.
I don't really want to hear
about Michigan last year. They're the team that you don't remember, but I do. You said about Michigan last year.
And guess what happened?
And lo and behold. So the question becomes, does Ryan Day have the juice that Jim Harbaugh had last year? I don't know. I am adopting I think I'm with you, Richard. Like, I'm adopting a shit or get off the pot stance with him in general this year. Like, he has failed in his job. Period.
You and I disagree with this. It's a different conversation for another podcast. But
do you think Ryan Day has failed at his job?
I do.
It's a different conversation.
He took the job. He took the job, and yes, we'll talk about it. It's a long show.
Am I? Did I have?
I've written about this.
Have I suffered? I know you've written about it. Is this Detroit Sports Talk Radio?
We actually did this show after they lost Ohio State again this year.
We've done this show three times.
We've done the show too many times.
It sounds dumber every time.
Okay. I think that you, Steven, are.
Why? Because
he's the coach at Ohio State, and he took the job when Ohio State had Michigan below it, and now Michigan has been above it for 3 years in a row. And he also has not won any trophies that anyone at Ohio State cares about in the last 3 years. I mean, that's why. We grade on curves, Steven. You have to grade on curves for this sport to be interesting. Otherwise, no coach at Ohio State other than John Cooper could ever be anything other than great.
John Cooper, shout out.
What?
Come on.
Jim Tressel?
Yeah, he was great.
Okay.
But my point, Steven, is that Ryan Day is the coach at Ohio State University. I'm interested because I know how Ohio State's fans feel coming into this year. Well, they feel how Richard feels that, like, Ohio State, they feel this every year, but I think it is especially, in fact, I know it's especially acute this year, given what Michigan has done in the last three, what Michigan just lost, and who is on Ohio State's roster this year. The best defensive player in the country, Caleb Downs, has come to Ohio State to be part of this situation this year.
No. I'm not arguing the stakes. The stakes, because I agreed with Richard, where it's like, I don't even think they're in the black in terms of, like, where he is in the ledger until they are, like, one playoff game
into the run.
One playoff win into the bracket.
But Steven, I want to be clear with you. I don't think he's like
that. Ryan Day's a bust, and I'm just like,
I want to be clear because I understand I am responsible for at least how my words could be perceived. Ryan Day I said this at the time, shouldn't fire him. Like, absolutely not. But he generous. Also, you can't look back at what he's done, his body of work the last 3 years at Ohio State, and think that if it continues, does not constitute failure. Like, Ohio State is not in the business of going 11-1 and losing to Michigan every year and not winning national championships.
But Ryan,
but that goes away.
So he has a chance to flip the dynamic, and I think this is the year to do it. But, like, it's not good enough so far. Like, and also the ability to not lose the 55 points given up to Iowa game, which has been his strength, because he has not lost those, like, shit kicker games that Urban would lose at Ohio State. That gets way less valuable now that you can afford to lose one of those every year, maybe even two, and still make the playoff. Like, his main skill, which is not having the huge bust loss, is now at a non-premium because of the change in the postseason format of the sport.
I think the preseason expectation game with Ohio State over the next 6 months is going to be crazy, man. I mean, it's roster, it's Chip Kelly. Does everybody remember Chip Kelly's Ohio State's offensive coordinator?
Didn't even mention that. Yeah. Like, no, I forget. I do forget.
Like it's, you know what I mean? It's going to be unbelievable. I mean, I know it's Ohio State. I know what Ohio State is in the zeitgeist, but it's going to be crazy.
Preseason number one should be, probably.
I would.
It's just weird to me how Jim Harbaugh wasn't a failure when he was putting up the same marks.
Interesting. That's funny. I actually had I'm responsible again for this. I had an argument with Michigan fans. Pointless. I've been doing this too much lately. And it's because it's unlike you. I don't really delight in it. I like the back and forth, but I don't really need to have big fights.
Oh, no. You get like – you absorb it.
I kind of flippantly said something right when Jim left for the NFL. I was like, what I'll remember about this was that his tenure kind of sucked for 6 years, and then he turned it around. And kind of sucked was I should know how that would be taken. He had turned Michigan around from what it was Brady Hoke and Rich Rod.
It was awesome for three of those six. Yeah, then it kind of sucked for three.
But my point is that if you leave that rivalry, if you're Ohio State or Michigan, and I think I would hold Ryan Day to the same standard as I did Jim. Like, if you were to leave that rivalry while being clearly the lower hand, like, then it's at best it's a huge bummer. Like, even if you have otherwise done really good work. That was what I was trying to express.
So wait, what you're telling me is that Michigan fans failed to acknowledge that something wasn't going according to their standards,
was a little bit of flippant language on my part.
That a Michigan man had been failing them and they wouldn't even admit that in hindsight?
I will also point out that sometimes Michigan fans can be a little bit more argumentative than I would prefer, but they would probably say the same about me.
So, why is that?
This has been the Alex Relitigates Twitter arguments portion of the program.
I just said we're fine, we're fine, we're fine. But my point is, I don't even remember.
Tell them tell them you'll just like, hey, I'm going to fuck your mom, and then you move on. It's been working for me for years.
Stop it. Stop it.
Watch out, Michigan moms.
The last spring ball team that I am interested in, right, that made my list, is Texas A&M. Because this is kind of on the marketing point, Richard, that you made. Anyone heard anything from Texas A&M football lately? You remember anything Mike Elko said this spring?
So
has a single quote of his made its way to your brain? Anything Mike Elko's done?
Can I jump the bit here and explain what's going on?
It's not a bit. Go ahead.
No, it's not.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I knew this was going to happen.
It's good.
Because I was told early on that this was going to happen. The first thing they did was this. So I was going to start this by saying, don't you remember his first year at Duke? But this is a college football podcast. No one fucking paid attention to Mike Elko's first year at Duke, right? If you go and meet a Mike Elko assistant right now, way off the record, just having a beer, shooting the shit on a golf course, whatever, you know what they're going to do? They're going to tell you there's a lot of work to be done. We don't have our culture yet. We don't have things where we want them. We feel confident about the future, but we're committed to a long-term build, because this is exactly what was said to my face the first, because I'm the idiot who'll be like, hey, how's Duke going to do this year? Right? Because I dabble in the corners of the sport. When that staff got assembled, I talked to people and they're like, we are shutting down and shutting up. Because it's been so overexposed, as Richard's about to tell you, in so many embarrassing ways. And like, I could do a whole show on this, Alex. Not only was A&M underproducing relative to like the exposure level they created to themselves, there was bad narrative internally. People weren't on the same page. They were embarrassed after the way the NIL roster fell apart. Elko on day one was like, hey, like, this is brown paper bag. We are anonymous until we can do something on the football field. And it's a really good idea.
It basically flies against most certainly the recent history of Texas A&M, but I'd argue farther back than that. A&M's been telling you they got more money than God forever.
Yes.
Like that's the broad arc of it. And it's always been funny because they've never done fuck all. Like, and so for A&M, if we're just going to take the recent 5-6 years when Jimbo was there, don't do anything or do the opposite because you've been telling everybody you have more money than God in the NIL era. And what has it gotten you as far as your fancy roster construction? Half of it's gone. The other thing is the last guy got in the most public back and forth tit for tat spat with the greatest coach in the history of the sport. One
and
time
Nick started
during
it, but Jimbo escalated it, and he probably shouldn't. I'm addressing the counter argument. Nick started it, but Jimbo did escalate it when he accused Nick of recruiting violations at a called press conference.
Go ask God what he did. What are you talking about?
The reason I cut you off there was because I know that there's an A&M fan listening in their car right now who's saying Nick started it, and he did, but obviously A&M escalated it. Ross Bjork contributed to this, by the way.
Yeah,
like,
man.
They all did.
What?
Like, it's as far as Mike Elko is concerned, if you're the opposite of your ex, if you hire the opposite of the last guy, this is a very, very key way they hired the opposite of the last guy. Which is, for God's sakes, shut it down.
I think you can take it a step further, and I'll be very positive towards the Aggies for a second. Y'all had to have it beat out of you. And Alex, what's the buyout number?
What's the buyout number? 80, 78, right. 77, something
And
like
guess
that.
What? Y'all got your asses whooped so bad, so publicly, and so embarrassingly, that you finally had some sense and humility beat into you. And the reason I say this, and I'm not trying to sound too redneck grandma, is that by toting an ass whooping that public and that embarrassing, you are now, as a fan base, as Richard said, pick a decade has always told you how great they were with without any sort of proof or any nothing on the field, right? That was always A&M. That gold Trans Am exists. That's a culture that they have talked more shit and provided less throughout the history of the sport.
Of the echelon we're talking about, I don't really think anybody comes close.
You don't even have to think about it for a second. I can tell you emphatically. So to arrive at a point where you would hire a Mike Elko and you would subscribe to, hey, we're going to put our heads down. We're going to shut the fuck up. We're going to lunch pail this thing. We're good at what we do. Like, this is FFC mode, guys, right? This is FFC.
And we talked about it the whole cycle.
Coach.
To hire one of those.
But I guess the positive here, it's like a lot of these, like you hear this in the military a lot, where it's like you need the necessary failure to implement strategy, meaning like you have to conclusively in a concrete manner eliminate certain ideas from the collective. And the idea in A&M was like, we're gonna go out and hire our own Nick Saban. That shit bombed amazingly, like historically, but yes. That's a good thing. That's a good thing, because now, Alex, to your point about the question of like, you haven't heard anything from A&M. You know who else I haven't heard from? A&M fans, A&M boosters.
True.
Knock
by
on
the way.
Wood.
Yeah.
No dumb fucking all hat, no cattle A&M booster has like done or said. Do you guys remember what happened in the first offseason for Jimbo? Like between the point he got hired and the point that they actually played a game. Do you guys remember this? There was a booster meeting where one of the other A&Ms, I can't remember which one it was, won a Division II national championship. It's A&M.
It was Texas A&M Commerce. I visited them to do a story about how they were the first Texas A&M to win a national championship in football.
So Commerce won a national title.
They got a
and
McDonald's
they had
next
the coach,
to their field.
They had the coach at like a rubber chicken banquet, one of these booster events, and they handed him, it was like 2017 national championship. And then they thought it was a good fucking idea that day to invite Jimbo. Do you guys remember this? They invited Jimbo to the same event and they handed him a national championship trophy. And do you know what true.
And not even a realistic one, because they made it match the Division II trophy, even though the playoff trophy is different.
And it said 20XX.
Uh-huh. Very weird.
What the
Commerce
the
people
American
took a lot of pride.
Fuck.
It's to the point where
the
I'm
Commerce
actually,
people loved it.
It's to the point where I'm actually pretty shocked he let that happen.
I think he. Hey, man, when it's guaranteed,
that was
remember that deal was
guaranteed. The problem.
Guaranteed.
That's the problem.
So from day one, I think that dude looked around and went, "Okay."
World time.
I think from day one, he kind of knew.
Steven, to the point about their fans. Right now on the main TexAgs premium forum, you go down the threads. This is as of lunchtime on March 25th that are currently lighting up the main Texas A&M message board. We've got
it's probably most of it's about
we've got basketball because their basketball team just put in a good run at the tournament. So we've got five thoughts on the basketball season ending. We've got George Strait, the king at Kyle Field, information.
Guess
he's playing the show there.
George Strait playing at Kyle Field.
Got win three club tickets on the front row behind home plate. We got baseball. I'm down like seven threads right now, and I'm not seeing football yet. 8, 9, 10, 11. I mean, we're down like 15 threads before we've got someone having a talk about how they reoffered a 2027 athlete.
These are good things, guys.
It's
these are good things.
Good for you, A&M. For
you know, what's weird
changing
is
your
I think
approach
they,
to
okay.
everything.
I'm
also,
not
they got a new AD. They upgraded at AD. Their fail son AD fails upwards.
Fails
up to
they got another AD. They got another
Alex,
AD.
Alex. Yeah. Let's,
I don't know. Might be an upgrade.
Breaks. I feel like you fell into the jet stream of narrative. Just chill.
I think it might be an upgrade.
It's Trev fucking Alberts. Just checking. Okay. I don't try and say this genuinely often, but
AD,
both of you were
the AD who gave Jimbo the extension left. They didn't even have to fire him. They
He didn't give the AD didn't give Jimbo.
I understand. I understand how it works. I understand.
The AD didn't get, and also do you need to Google, like, call Spencer and Holly and just say Trev Alberts.
I understand.
Record the phone call though. Okay?
I understand. Right. I'll take your call. I understand. I retract.
You've gone so far afield on, like, things are good, and now you're like, no, they've upgraded ADs and they're not, like, they're just, things are calm, which is sort of a minor miracle at A&M. That should be the thing that we focus on. I was going to say some outlandish shit, but you beat me to the punch, which is, I feel like that A&M, like, rich person held hostage by a coach, weird. They try and justify it all the time. They get highly defensive in the media and social media. That has all migrated to Baton Rouge. And they are constantly telling themselves, because I hear about this all the time, Brian Kelly would not have gone to Michigan. There's no way. Like, he's going to win a couple national titles here first at LSU. Like everybody catches this infection if you spend enough money, because it's like a slow forming buyer's remorse. But A&M should just take a deep breath and enjoy the silence. And here's the other thing too. Like, Richard, this is the reality, is they're not going to, probably not going to come in and make noise relative to contender status immediately, because this isn't Duke in the ACC. Right. This is, like, here's the deal. Texas is coming into the league.
Dude,
they're a national title caliber
program.
You don't
even have to get to Thanksgiving weekend. They play Notre Dame fucking week one.
Yes. It's okay to just do the work and not talk the shit. Now, I will say this. I know enough about Texas culture, and I've spent enough time in the state of Texas. I'm talking about the whole shebang now. You can't do this workman-like Midwestern humility all shucks thing for too long before they're like, nah, I got to tell everybody I got a 12-foot dick, even though I don't. Like, that is a disease there. And so Elko has about, like, 2 years grace, but I do want to applaud A&M as a culture for even affording him that.
Gig him.
And if you're an Aggie with a 12-foot dick, please don't prove it to me.
American Giant makes the durable, comfortable spring closet staples you need for work, the gym, and even happy hour. Made in America. Designed to last a lifetime. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.